and speak to a Bible study group in Norman a Thursday and Friday, and then come back Friday evening. And what I wanted was your prayers, because it's kind of a play-it-by-ear kind of thing. Supposed to go down and help them a little bit with what spiritual gifts are, and particularly how they relate to the current situation. And I got word that they planned something different for Thursday night, that there would be some unsaved people there. So I'll have to wait till I get there and see what the situation is, and then try to select something that's appropriate and relative to what they want. So I appreciate your prayers about that. The other thing is that on Sunday morning, I'm not going to introduce 2 Peter. I was reading a parable, and I like to occasionally work in parables. I find them very instructive and sometimes just loaded. And I found something in there I think might be good for us at this time. And so Sunday morning I'm doing a special thing on the parable of the seed and the four soils. And it'll just be for this Sunday morning. Then the following week we'll be working on 2 Peter. Okay? Also like to say that we did get the copier machine that we wanted. And boy, it's just a great machine. Now all we have to do is pay for it. And we've got an ad running this week in the Denver Post, and we're trying to sell our Gestetner duplicator, which is a top-of-the-line duplicator. Retail on it was something like $1,650, and we're trying to sell that for around $900, $1,000. So I appreciate your prayers about that. That would help us then on this other machine. Okay. Tonight we want to introduce the book of Numbers and give you somewhat of a feel for this book relative to where it's going to take us, what its emphasis is, and so on. And we're going to use really the first three verses to introduce the book, but we're going to give sort of a panorama, sort of an overview of what that book is all about. I also want to try to hang this thing on a historical framework so that you'll know the context and historically in which it was written, in which it occurs, and then you can locate it in time. I'm open to your questions at any time, so feel free as we go along. Will you look, please, at verse 1, 2, and 3 of this book? And the Lord spake unto Moses in the wilderness of Sinai. You'll notice that the writer of this book writes from an eyewitness type account. He's going to tell things that could only be told by an eyewitness. And to say that the Pentateuch is a compilation of X number of redactors and writers and so on is to pervert the whole picture. You just have a continuation with this little wild consecutive translated and in all of the five books of the Pentateuch. One just takes up where the other one leaves off. And the Lord spake unto Moses in the wilderness of Sinai, in the tabernacle of the congregation, on the first day of the second month, in the second year after that they were come out of the land of Egypt. He locates he gives us the title of the book, he fixes the starting date of the book, he tells us the where, and he tells us the communicator. And he says, verse 2, take you the sum of all the congregation of the children of Israel, that have a census, after their families, by the house of their fathers, with the number of their names, every male by their polls, interested only in the males this time, and interested only in males from 20 years up. From 20 years old and upward, all that are able to go forth to war in Israel, there is a military preparedness concept related to the census. Thou and Aaron shall number them by their armies. Okay? First thing we want to work with is the title. The title. Now the title in our Bible, of course, is Numbers. But the title in any Hebrew Bible normally will be made up of the first three or four words or the first phrase of the Hebrew text. For example, in Genesis, the first phrase in English is "in the beginning." The Jews do not have a book of Genesis in their Bible. They simply have a book called Bereshit, "in the beginning." They don't have a book of Exodus. They have a book that says these are the names of El Shemot. They don't have a book of Leviticus. They have a book called Vayikra El Moshe, which is really in, well, that's Leviticus. Okay, that's Leviticus. In Numbers, it's Benidber Sinai, or Benidber Sinai, in the wilderness of Sinai. So in the Hebrew Bible, the name of this book would be Beredbar Sana, but that won't help you. We'll do it in English, "in the wilderness." They don't really take the first phrase in this, because the first phrase in this is really a clause, "the Lord spake unto Moses," "in the wilderness of Sinai." Okay? Now where then do we get our titles? Where do we get our titles for Old Testament books? Well, really the root is the LXX, but we get them really from the Latin, from the Vulgate text. But the Vulgate text got them from the LXX. So we get them through the from the LXX via the Vulgate. So the LXX title is the title Arithmoi. And what does that look like? Arithmetic. A-R-I-T-H-M-O-I, which means numbers. And we get our title from the Latin word numbers, which I won't put up here. Okay? Okay. And the reason that this is the name of the book in the LXX and in the English Bible is that there are two censuses in the book. In other words, this is because of the two, what's the plural for census? Censis? Censuses? I don't know. Censi? No, it's plural, censuses. Now, aren't you listening to what I'm saying? It's either censuses or censi. All right, now that we got that settled. The first census is in Numbers 1 through 4, and the second one is in Numbers 26. This census begins with it takes 20 days. It starts on the first day of the second month, the second year after they're out of Egypt. They're still at Sinai. And so just before they're going to leave Sinai, you have census number 1, see? It's number 1 at Sinai. And as soon as it's over, they pack their goods and leave. But census number 2 is at Moab, and that means they're ready to go into the promised land. Now, why would they have two censuses, or censi? Why would they have two? And what happens in 40 years? And what happens in the wandering? This whole census dies, except how many? Two. Only two out of this generation of fighting men. If you were 20 years old here, you're 40 when this, if you would have been alive, but you're not going to be alive. Unless you're Joshua or Caleb. They're the only two out of this whole group of fighting men that are going to make it into the promised land. And in the middle is the wilderness wandering, which is the, if you could get water to it, it'd be very fertile because they got all those dead bodies buried all over that wilderness. They're just scattered all over there. Okay? Okay. The reason it's called the Book of Numbers in the English Bible and in the LXX, Arithmoi, is because there are two censuses which number the fighting males of Israel. Okay? We want to... I didn't want to make this point B. I want to make point B down here. Point B is really the numbering or the census. In other words, this is an emphasis of the text that is going to introduce us to the book. This is really comes in verse 2. And it really runs from 1, 2, you begin to have the instructions, through 4, 49. Okay? And then second census, as we said, is in Numbers 26. Now the point that I want to make is I want us to note that the purpose of the census was related to military preparedness. The census related to military preparedness. For whatever reasons, they're not really given in the book, God wanted Moses to be aware of the number of fighting men upon whom he could depend from each tribe. There will be one tribe that will be excluded from the strictness of the numbering, and that will be the tribe of Levi. And the tribe of Levi was not to be involved in this military preparedness. And when they number Levi, they just take all the males from 1 month up and include them in the census. Okay. Now, I don't know that it's important, that maybe not at this point. I might give it to you before we get done. I'll tell you how the census... Well, let me put it down since we've got it here. We've got a census in 1, 2 through 49, then we have another one in Numbers 26. Here we have the first one, number 1 here. Number 1 census totals out at 603,550. And you'll find that figure expressed in chapter 146. And that excludes the Levites, 146. Even all they that were numbered were 600,000 and 3,550. That's chapter 1 and verse 46. Okay? Take all the tribes. I have all the numbers written down up here, but I'm not going to get them to you now. And number 1 is sort of a summary chapter of this. Beyond this, the Levites number 22,000 at this time, and those are not adult males. Those are males from 1 month up, from Levites. It's obvious that this book was written by an eyewitness account. When you get over to the 26th chapter, and you have another generation, 40 years has passed, and this generation is gone, you have a total then of 601,730. And I didn't write that down, I guess. Did I? No. I didn't write the reference down. You'll find it in number 26 somewhere. Okay? So there's a difference. Not a whole lot, but a difference in number. And one of the things that's interesting is to compare the number of each tribe. We're not going to do that today. I'm just trying to introduce you to something that happens in the book. This is a major phenomena that happens in the book, and the book takes its name from that. Now, are there any questions about that? Yeah, fighting men, and I couldn't find it, but it seemed to me that somewhere there was given an upper limit on fighting men, upper age limit, but I couldn't find it. So I'm not sure that there's an upper age limit. Well, the estimate, it runs anywhere between 1,600,000 and 2 million people. Big, large group of people. Particularly when you consider you're taking them through a very hostile, you know, like Arizona, let's put it that way. You're taking them through Arizona. That's tough. You're going to get a lot of complaints. In this study. Any other questions? Okay, let's work a little bit on the historical framework of the book. Historical framework of the book. And what I want to do is relate it to the whole journey from the Passover on, as well as give you the movement of the book itself. Now, we're helped a lot because we're told in chapter 1 that this thing was to begin in the second month, on the first day of the second month, in the second year after they came out of Egypt. So you're moving chronological by the new religious calendar, which began in the month of Abib, or began in Passover season. It's normally March or April in our calendar. We say March or April because they went by lunar month. So we have the exact timing of this. We know exactly what day it happened, see? And it's obvious that they were keeping very, very close records. So when you compare chapter 1, verse 1, and verse 18, look at verse 18. And they assembled all the congregation together in the first day of the second month, and they declared their pedigrees after their families. Can you imagine? All these people, they've got them all there. They had the copier machines running, and the forms to fill out, and turn in, make an extra copy of this, an extra copy of that. They declared their pedigrees after their family by the house of their fathers according to the number of their names from 20 years upward by their polls. Now, they apparently spend 20 days at this. At least they do not break camp until the 20th day of the month. So it was a big process. And I'd really like to know how they handled it. What did they write, put all that information? Do you realize, with the writing materials they have, what a stack of material that would make with all those forms and everything? That kind of thing interests me. I'll be happy to talk to Moses about that when we get to heaven. Whatever, we have the results of it in the book of Numbers. We have the sum total of it. We have the figures of it. But here it looks like they really put all this information down somehow because they had their lineage spelled out. Well, we know that began then, and then we know from chapter 10, verse 11, that they leave that month on the 20th day. So they get it done, and they get packed up, and they're ready to go. But the other key verse is in Deuteronomy. Let's get a note down first. Numbers covers almost 39 years. Almost 39 years. Okay? And the way that we know is by Numbers 1, verse 2, and verse 18, and Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 3, I think it is. Will you look at that yet? Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 3. Boy, this is kind of interesting. I got the reading. Some of these verses, you know, you read them and you really don't. You don't notice them. Look at this statement. I'll read verses 1 through 3 of Deuteronomy. These be all the words which Moses spake unto all Israel on this side of the Jordan in the wilderness, in the plain over against the Red Sea, between Paran and Tophel and Laban and Hazeroth and Dizahab, which is near the plain of Moab. And then look in parentheses. There are 11 days' journey from Horeb by way of Mount Seir unto Kadesh Barnea. You see that there are, it's supplied. It simply says 11 days from Horeb by way of Mount Seir unto Kadesh Barnea. In other words, if you were doing that alone and you wanted to move, you could make it from Mount Horeb or Mount Sinai. Horeb is just another name for Sinai. You could make it from Sinai to where Moses delivers the address of Deuteronomy, four addresses of Deuteronomy. You could have made it in 11 days. Now, I don't think you could have made it in 11 days with 1.5 million people. Unless you were going by Greyhound bus or something like that. But you could have made it in 11 days. That would be the normal journey on that route. Well, look what happens in verse 3. And it came to pass in the 40th year. This is not an accident that you have those two statements there. In the 11th month, on the first day of the month, that Moses spake unto the children of Israel according to all that the Lord had given him in commandment unto them. Deuteronomy 1:3, you are in the 40th year after the Exodus. Okay? In the 11th month, it says 40th year, the 11th month, first day. See how that's pinpointed for us? And this up here is in the second year, second month, first day. Alright, now what does that mean? That means that the format of the wilderness experience is something like this. Point B. Format of the wilderness experience. And I'll try to graph this out for you. I have to think historically. It helps me to try to think that this happened after this or this happened before this, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And in the book of Numbers, you can lose sight of that. You can have Aaron die in, I think it's chapter 20. And if you don't know it, he dies in the 40th year of the wandering. I don't think it tells you, if I remember correctly, in chapter. I don't think it tells you there. You have to go some other place to find that. It helps me to know he died in the 40th year because that tells me they're there. They're at Moab, see, when he died. Now, the format of the world, this is the whole wilderness experience, goes something like this. First of all, we'll start with the Exodus, and we'll draw a timeline that will look like this. That's the timeline. And over here on the left with a little vertical line up from the timeline is 1446 B.C., which is, and it's April 15th, that is the day after Passover, and Passover was 14th of Nisan. It's the next day, and you have the Exodus. This is the Exodus out of Egypt. Okay, now it only takes them, we'll kind of try to, we can't keep this totally in perspective in terms of our spaces that we allow, but we'll only allow a little space because it only takes them 3 months to get to Sinai. So this distance between that vertical bar and the second vertical bar, which is Sinai, they arrive at Sinai, and up here we'll put our ARR, is 3 months. That's awful small. Can you see that? You see that in the back? Boy, you got good eyes. Okay. Now the numbering comes in the second month of the second year on the first day, and they leave Sinai, Numbers 11, verse 10, in the second month of the second year, 20th day. So, you know, they're at Sinai for 11 months. Is that right? Yeah, 11 months. At least 11 months. So we need a little more space. Now the thing gets out of proportion. Over here, this little bar is leave Sinai. And in between, we have 11 months. Okay? And in that 11 months, then, they get the law. They get all the instructions for the building of the tabernacle. They build the tabernacle. Then after the tabernacle is built, they get all the information for the book of Leviticus because God speaks out of the tabernacle to them for it, with it, with that information. I think that really comes in the last month. In other words, the tabernacle is up for 1 month and God is communicating the book of Leviticus to Moses and so on. Okay. Then they leave Sinai. And they go to a place called Kadesh, which you know as Kadesh Barnea. And Kadesh is located somewhere in the wilderness of Paran. In one place it says it's the wilderness of Zin. So it must be right on the border of the wilderness of Zin and Paran. And we know it's only 50 miles south of Hebron. And at Kadesh, they send the two spies up into the promised land, and the two, how many spies? They sent 10 spies? 12 spies? 12, I think. Yeah, 12 spies. And only two come back with a positive report. 10 are negative. So you take a vote and say, should we go in? Majority rules, 10 to 2, no. And who won with the people, the positive or the negative? Who always wins normally with the people? The negative. The negative won with the people. And you have the rebellion, and then you have the wandering. Okay? Now, we don't know how long it took them. I thought there was a passage, and I want to tell you, I looked high and low for that passage. I couldn't find it. I thought it was located. But let's give them the benefit of the doubt, and let's say it took 2 months. Now, we know it doesn't take that long, but let's just give them the benefit and say it took 2 months to get to Kadesh. Well, what that means is, over here on the right, and now we get out of focus, because this space over here that we have from the Exodus all the way to Kadesh, well, 11 months in between, would be 5 months in terms of traveling time. And this space, which is even going to be less, is going to represent 39 years. Here they come to Moab by Jordan. And the time space is 39 years. Okay. Now what you have, of course, in this 39 years is time and energy and men wasted. This is where you have the wanderings and the overthrow, what Paul refers to as the scattering in the wilderness. Let me show you this another way. This helps you with the whole Exodus all the way to get you to Jordan. And what Numbers is interested in is this experience right here. See? From Sinai to Jordan. Let's loop a little thing down like this, and this is what the book of Numbers is about. Okay? Okay, so let's just simply then take the book of Numbers. And over here on the, we'll put our timeline in, and over here on the left we'll put Sinai down. And over here we'll put Kadesh down, which are watersheds, so to speak, stopping places. And then over here on the right we'll put Moab. Alright. This little section from Sinai to Kadesh is covered in Numbers, chapter 10, verse 11 to 14, 45. In other words, you get there in a hurry. Not a lot of material is spent on that. In that section, you have the general negativeness of the people, the whole crowd. You have the Aaron and Miriam rebellion. You have the spies into the land. And you have then the negative choice. Israel rebels. And you're at chapter 14. See, this is chapter 13 and so on as you work back. Okay, then in this other section, Kadesh to Moab, you would think you would read about the wandering, but you don't. They're hardly even mentioned. All you have is this enormous gap in time. And as you get down to the summary section of the book, the last section of the book, they have a chapter, chapter 33, which is a log of all the travels. And in chapter 33, they mention all these stopping places, some of which aren't even mentioned in the book. It's just simply a log of their travel. And nothing, hardly anything is said at all about the 39 years of wandering. You have to go elsewhere to find that and to put the thing together. So, really what you have in this section, which is Numbers 15 to 21. Now, you can see we need a little more room over here to get the rest of the book in. Because the book has, 36 chapters? Numbers 15 to 21, what you have in this section is simply, in chapter 15, you have miscellaneous laws about the Sabbath and the man that picks up the sticks on the Sabbath and what they have. You have the rebellion led by Korah. You have Aaron's rod that butts to show God's vindication of the pre-Aaronic priesthood. You have the red heifer, the law of the red heifer, another sacrifice. Looks like it was maybe just a wilderness sacrifice. And then you have Moses' sin, where he smites the rock twice. And you also have 40 years of wandering, but you're going to have a hard time reading about it there. Kind of the grace of God who overlooks this enormous sin of Israel. Now we have another section in the book, as I said, over here. You're at Moab, and so in Numbers 22 through 36, you're at Moab. And certain things happen at Moab. For example, the whole book of Deuteronomy is going to happen there. But in Numbers, you have the experience with Balaam, and that takes almost three chapters, and it ends up in Baal worship. Really an exciting story, and it's important because it's mentioned about what's going to happen in New Testament times, in the New Testament. You also have the second numbering, chapter 36. You also have a log of the account. I don't have everything down here. And then you have land instructions. What they're to do when they get in the land, some land instructions, and you have the close of the book. Now, is there any question I could answer maybe about the format of this, anything we've said under this section? What we're trying to do here is orient you to the historical framework of the book and then try to give a general idea of where the book takes us and how it takes us here. Any questions? Yes, Bill? This one over here. Okay, this column deals with Numbers 10, 1 through... Okay, general... Sinai to Kadesh. In Numbers 10, 1 through 14, 45, you have general negativeness of the people, first of all. It really begins in chapter 11. Then you have the Aaron and Miriam rebellion in chapter 12. You're at Kadesh. And from Kadesh, they send the spies into the land, chapter 13, and then when the spies come back, chapter 14, Israel rebels, and you have then the initiation of the wandering experience. So the way I normally do that, and I don't know if this will make sense to you, is this. That's the wanderings. But one of the most exciting things in the Old Testament, as an illustration, I see it as an illustration of the grace of God, is he doesn't talk about it. It's not worth talking about. He just buries them all. Guys are dying every day. I figured it out one time how many guys had to die every day. I'll get that for you sometime. Tombstones all over the place. Okay? Now I want to go over the key lesson in this book, and I want to illustrate it to you. Okay? That's the last thing I want to do tonight, by way of introduction. Okay? The key lesson in this book. When you always say the key lesson, this is always by way of interpretation, and you might be wrong, but anyhow, this is how I see it. Numbers illustrates. Numbers illustrates Israel's failure to walk by faith. Numbers illustrates Israel's failure to walk by faith. E.g., that is, their refusal to live the, now please get this terminology, the faith, rest, action life. I am tired of people making faith rest to be passivity. It's not that. It's a rest, but it's active. And they refuse to live the faith, rest, active life. But the lesson is more than that. It is their refusal to live the faith, rest, action life contrasted with Yahweh's faithfulness, with Jehovah's faithfulness, to bring them to the promised land. In other words, you have a tremendously ordered system. You have the order of the building of the tabernacle in the book of Exodus. In Leviticus, you have the order in the sacrificial rites that are related to the tabernacle. In Numbers 1 through 4, you have the order of the camp related to the tabernacle. In Numbers 10, verses 1 through 10, you have the order of the breaking of the camp. It was when they were going to move out, that was an orderly process. In Numbers 10, verse 11 through 28, you have the order of the march. When they marched, it was an orderly process. I used to think this was a big mob. All these sheep and goats and things scattered out over, and here's these people with their robes and these shepherd's crooks, and here they are, just one big mass of people just spread out all over corruption. That is not how they went through the wilderness at all. Not at all. It was very ordered. You have order in Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers. You have an order of the march. You have it all given by God. And then, boom, you start, and they move out. And Numbers 11 through 33 records the disorder of Israel in the wilderness. And the faithfulness of God, even though they were disordered and a bunch of clucks, and they blew it, and I am not willing to concede that all 550 fighting men were unsaved. Some of those men had to be saved. They had to be saved. But they died in that wilderness. And it records their failure at God's faithfulness to get them into the promised land. So you have failure on human part contrasted with the faithfulness of God. What happened? What really happened to Israel? Let me illustrate the order of the book of Numbers. Order in Numbers. Okay? But maybe we should say God's order. He's the one that dictated the order. Right? He's the one that dictated the order about the tabernacle. Make it after this plan. See that you don't diverge from this plan. Make everything according to the plan. And Moses says, here's how we're going to do it. Don't diverge from God's plan. We'll make the tabernacle. It's God that dictated the order. Now, what was the order that he dictated in the book of Numbers? Well, the first thing he does is give order of the camp. The order of the camp, always relative to the tabernacle. Just like everything we do in this age in which we live is relative to Jesus Christ. Everything relates to what Jesus Christ is doing in this age. And if we're going to have order, we must relate to what he is doing. And in order to know what he is doing, we have to know his word. Well, what God was doing with this people in the wilderness was relative to the tabernacle. Now, I did this for you once before, and you'll remember it when I draw it up here. But when you had Israel camped, and this will take almost the front page of a piece of paper, you had the tabernacle set up in the middle of the camp, and this little building to the left, this would be east. It always faced east, and this would be north and west and south. And there would be your brazen laver. Here would be your entrance, the brazen altar, brazen laver, holy of holies with the candlestick and... Candlestick was on the other side, wasn't it? Candlestick was always on the south side. And table of showbread, and the incense, and then the Ark of the Covenant with the mercy seat on top of it. Israel, when they camped, was to surround the camp this way. You would have three tribes on the east, and these three blocks represent three tribes. And I'm not sure they lined up this way, but these three were to be on this side. Issachar and Judah and Zebulun. Okay? Down on the south side, you had Gad, Reuben, and Simeon. Gad, Reuben, and Simeon. On the west side, you had Manasseh, Ephraim, and Benjamin. Manasseh, Ephraim, and Benjamin. Ben-Hamin. And on the north side, you had Asher, Dan, and Naphtali. Okay. Now, around the tabernacle proper were the offspring of four of Levi's sons, Gershon, Merin, and Kohath, three of them, and then Aaron and Moses and his son on the east side, like this. Up here, you had the Merinites. Over here on the west side, you had the Gershonites. Okay? On the south side, you had the Kohathites. And over here you had Moses and Aaron and sons incorporated. So that we could draw a little circle around this inner group like this. I don't mean to make this, maybe we should do it in a dotted fashion, but what I'm trying to do is to show you that this inner circle was reserved for the priests when they were camped. And every one of these priests had a special assignment. There was a family of priests that were allowed to handle the ark. Other people weren't supposed to even touch it. There were certain priests who took down the linen fence and rolled it up. There were others that gathered up the sockets that it sat upon, and so on. All the priests had an assignment. And when they stopped the camp, you know, when the cloud would stop, then the ark would stop, and it would be right there. They would set up the tabernacle in the wilderness, and these people would all go to work. And everybody else knew how they were to camp. They all had their own trumpeters. They had their own insignias. They followed insignias. It was very, very orderly. It was like the Boy Scout Jamboree down in Colorado Springs on a larger scale. Everybody knew precisely where to go. Now, that's order. And this is what you have recorded in Numbers 1 through 4. See what I'm saying? Order of the camp relative to the tabernacle. Now, while I've got that upper, let me just give you the number of the fighting men while we got it up here. It's going to get crowded, isn't it? Well, I can do it. We'll start down here at the bottom. Gad had 45,650. Reuben had 46,500. Simeon had 59,300. Zebulun had 57,400. I'm going to compute this at the end and tell you what the total figure is, so I want to make sure I got that right. Judah was the largest tribe with 74,600. And Issachar was 54,400. Naphtali was 53,400. Dan was 62,700. And Asher was 41,500. Manasseh, 32,200. And Ephraim, 40,500. And Benjamin was 35,400. And let's see, let me add that up real quick. 603,550. key thought is, in that section, is there was a place for everyone in that camp, and everyone was expected to be in his place. Okay? That's order. Okay. We said order, first of all, was in the camp relative to Israel. Now, what about when they broke camp? Okay? The cloud lifts and moves out in front of the camp, and that's the signal, trying to break camp. Well, this is what you have, and we won't go through the passage, but you have order of breaking of the camp. Everybody didn't just run and grab something. They all had an assignment. So you have an order of the breaking of the camp, and that runs in Numbers chapter 10, verses 1 through 10. Then what about when, how do they move out? The trumpets all sound, and the ark and the Levites that are assigned to carry the ark, they move out in front of the whole thing. They follow the ark. Well, they were a weird-looking bunch. Here's this ark out in front. Can you imagine somebody saying, I wonder what they got in that box? Maybe it's an A-bomb or something. I bet it's some secret device in that box they got out in front. Remember? Did they have to carry the ark around Jerusalem? Around Jericho, I mean? I think they did. Oh, they were a weird bunch. What a way to fight. Oh, what wonderful stories. Get tempted to chase rabbits. What are the breaking of the camp? Here. Now you have the order of the march. Okay? Numbers 10, verses 11 through 28. Now, did they follow the order? Well, we have to assume that they followed the order, except where you have some people wanting to usurp the priesthood of Aaron. God's choice. Rebellion. But God takes care of those issues as they raise their ugly head. He knocks them in the head right away. And so we have to assume that they followed the order. At least I did. But they didn't succeed. So here is what I've come up with Israel's key problem, which is in conjunction with this refusal to practice the faith, rest, action, life. They institutionalize God's order for them. But totally neglected the spirit and the living faith dynamic of that order. And I tell you, once a people, Old Testament people, New Testament people, local church people do that, they are finished as far as any real accomplishment for the Lord Jesus Christ and any achieving of any objective that God has for them. E.g., they went through the motions. They went through the motions. I think they did. There's no indication that they didn't. They had to set that tabernacle up. People had to camp around it. We don't have any indication that they rebelled that way. They had to bring sacrifices. They must have brought the sacrifices. They went through the motions, divorced from the Spirit, capital S. And the thing died, in a sense. Or at least 603,548 fighting men died in the wilderness. So that this book, in my approach, I don't know that we're going to go through every chapter in this book. I want to pick out certain ones that really sort of highlight. I want to get the journey started as fast as I can. And there's maybe one or two chapters that we might cover before that. But by the time we get done, we ought to have a real appreciation for what the faith, rest, action life really is. What it really is to walk by faith. This is the section of scripture that the writer to the Hebrews uses to reaffirm the activeness of faith and what it should mean to us. Okay, are there questions we could try to answer? I'm finished. Yes, Phil. Well, they had a certain pattern that they had to go through. Yeah, to get to do all this. It was God's order. It was his direction that they do it. And it became institutionalized with them. Oh, we've got to go to church on Sunday. I mean, after all, everybody goes to church on Sunday. So you go to church. It becomes an institutional thing to do. You couldn't go to church Saturday morning if you wanted to. There's no church on Saturday morning. You couldn't go Monday morning. You've got to go on Sunday. And you can go because it's an institutional thing to do. The church becomes an institution. In many ways, we fight the institutionalized church. I think the institutionalized church is terribly dangerous. But you can institutionalize anything in your life in a deadly sense. In other ways, you can neglect it. But I'll tell you what, if you divorce the Christian life from the Spirit, or from the spirit of the Christian life, or the dynamic of the Christian life, there's a spirit in the New Testament. There's a spirit of love in the New Testament. There's a spirit of evangelism that permeates the New Testament. There's a spirit of very positive, eager living in the New Testament. There's a spirit of antagonism in the New Testament that you feel from the world. All of these run through the New Testament. Now, you dare not institutionalize or try to mechanize those things. So when I use this word institutionalize, I'm using it in the concept of mechanize. And their way of life became mechanized. You see? There was no real living dynamic in it. And the reason there wasn't is, the book of Hebrews tells us, there was no faith rest. And so all kind of negative things. Order, 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 order. Okay, we practice the order, and at this point, here's where you just take it up. Time to march out. Raise the flag. Boom. Ark moves out. Levites move out. Judah moves out. Next tribe moves out. Next tribe moves out. Everybody's marching through the wilderness. Order, order, order. And total disorder in terms of the of the mind relative to what's going on. And everything negative. We don't have any water. God, what'd you do? You want to kill us? Is that why you brought us out here? Yeah, that's what you want. Well, we don't like the food. The quail tastes terrible. Oh, it's horrible stuff. What did you do with this one? What'd you do? Leave us out here to kill us? Did you realize what an accusation that is against God? Mm-hmm. That's what you have. So inside, even though they're going through all the motions of the order, there's really no real spirit identity with what's going on. Okay? And it happens in our Christian lives the same way. And when it does, we're in trouble. And sooner we recognize it and face it and try to correct it by spiritual means, then the more the Christian life comes to mean us. So really, Numbers is sort of a lesson by contrast. It's sort of going to tell us, make sure you don't live your life this way. Even though God skips over the 40 years, he has to bump them all off to get them out of the way. It's a fun book. I hope you can stay with the study. Show the closing book. Another question?
Father, we thank you for the grace, and we know that the human beings that you dealt with in this book are just like us. Same human nature, same sin nature to deal with. But we're thankful that we're told in the New Testament that these things happen for our example upon whom the ends of the age have come, in order that we shouldn't fall into the same traps or lust patterns that they did. And we pray that you'll give us an eagerness and anticipation of these illustrations that you give us of this number experience, and a deep appreciation to pray for one another and encourage one another in the true and real Christian way of life.